welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And oddly enough, after last week's episode, it's actually this one where I am currently technically high on painkillers.
High off his gourd and watching some crazy, trippy, delightful shit. Delightful shit that we enjoyed, but apparently some portions of the internet did not. And rather vocally, it may be the straw that broke the camel's back. This may be the end. Is it finally the weakness, the chink in the armor of the MCU? This is Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
You're an interesting man, Scott Lang. You're an Avenger. You have a daughter. But you've lost a lot of time, like me. We can help each other with that. Who are you? I'm the man who can give you the one thing you want. What's that? Time.
Can rewrite existence and shatter timelines. You cannot trust him.
I don't care who this guy is. I just lost so much. He can give us a second chance. Let me make this easy for you. You will bring me what I need. Or everything you call a life will end.
This is all my fault.
You may not want her to watch this.
We had a deal.
You could win.
I don't have to win. We both just have to lose. I'm sorry, Cassie.
And this also may be the film that has finally brought us MCU hipsters.
I was into it before it got overly commercialized, even though it was overly commercialized to start with. I was into it when it was just apologisms for the U.S. military policy.
But, I mean, and... as I say this, to be clear, I'm speaking in just general terms, but from a lot of what I'm seeing on social media, it's like now you're somehow cooler if you bash the MCU.
Yeah, now that DC has James Gunn and there's hope in the universe again on that side, I think everyone's just going... Fuck that shit. Over you. Over you. I mean, it has been, oh God, 15 years. The MCU can almost drive, and like most teenagers, is becoming insufferable to some people.
And I think there's also a certain degree of, for some reason, I think some people also kept expecting a continual buildup after Endgame.
Yeah, it comes down to, like, I don't think people understand how to watch these because they keep watching them, like, as a movie serial, expecting, as you say, like, continuous buildup instead of understanding the ebb and flow and pacing of serialized comic books where, yep, here's a really good story, you know, maybe it's six issues, and then it's followed by, like, three random, completely unconnected issues And then we get into a storyline that maybe runs for four issues and it's not your favorite. And when you're rereading it, you're just like, oh my God, I love Punisher Marvel Knights, but do I have to really read about the medallion? A taxi crime boss? I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Not here for this. But you read it, you get through it, and then you are delightfully rewarded eventually, hopefully. Or they cancel the title and bring in someone else. This is how this goes. If a film doesn't appeal to you, wait for the next one. Wait for the next one. Because like, and then the comic book's release schedule, of course, helps for that. You only have to wait a week. Here you have to wait like a month or more, usually. And something will come along. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. But like, oh my God, people have no patience. And no one seems to give a shit about like medium literacy anymore.
No, they really don't. And I think also Marvel could be at fault here as well, because this could have been overhyped.
It probably was very much overhyped.
Yeah.
Especially since they're not entirely sure what to do, if it's not multiverse related or Spider-Man or Spider-Man multiverse related, because of course that made so much money, all of the so much money. Whereas this one is kind of like, now I understand they laid the groundwork for it. It is the basis of how the Marvel Universe is built, the Omniverse or whatever. They laid the groundwork for that way back in Ant-Man 1. So it's not like any of this has been tacked on. But
no.
Maybe they took too long getting to it. And because we've had so many other multiverse-related shows, it just felt like, and now it's Ant-Man's turn. Hey, Ant-Man, come have your turn. And so I can completely see how people would be frustrated by that. I still believe that that is negated by approaching these as comic books, not movies. But again, how the fuck am I supposed to explain that to so many million people who don't read comics? And quite frankly, in their defense, who the fuck would want to start cold turkey reading Marvel right now and try to figure out what the hell is going on? It was bad enough when I started reading in the 80s. The 80s. That's it. 20 years plus of continuity, and it was already like, what the shit is happening? Without Fred Hembeck destroys the Marvel Universe, I would not know who half of these fucking characters are sometimes.
Oh, yeah, no, I can believe it. And The simple fact is, just to continue with your regarding these movies as comic books analogy, phase one was pretty much those random like three or four issues where you're just meeting the characters, having their own individual stories so you can get to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And then two and three leading up to Endgame was the big crossover. Phase four was, again, your X amount of random comics to introduce a new group of characters.
Right? While also having a breath of fresh air, because you need to have a couple of breaths of fresh air, a couple of returns. Not everything is going to forward the story, the main storyline. And whenever comic book companies do that, like they're like, okay. It's not a full reboot. It's a soft reboot. But all new, all Marvel, as an example. The all new, all Marvel, where they're like, continuity does exist, but also some of these comic books are just whatever. They're comic books. What continuity are they in? They're in comic books. Shut the fuck up. And so I think they should have maybe approached it that way with a few things. Like, what would be interesting is if they had completely, I'm not saying it for this film, it doesn't make sense for this film, but if they curveballed us and gave us a film that does not take place in the MCU, it takes place in a universe that would be like, say, the Fox X-Men universe. And so we can, instead of like, here's the Fox X-Men, here you go, it's everything you wanted. They could start with this one character way the fuck over there, like in their own universe, and have them travel slowly towards the 616. You could have maybe like drawn that out with America Chavez, but good luck getting people to show up to an America Chavez movie without tacking on a name that is bigger, bigger, bigger.
Yeah.
And so it becomes a Doctor Strange film. But like, imagine if they had just introduced it kind of that way, of like, you follow this one character and there you're into the multiverse. If it's Loki, cool. If it's America Chavez, cool. It seems like they have overplayed at the moment the hand. Now, obviously, all of this is leading up to, like, the multiverse is the playground. We need to get you used to it. We need to go over all of it. We need to have it be second nature. But it seems to have pissed a lot of people off because either the way they did it, the expectations they have, or the fact that literally everything else is trying it now. Everything. It's an old storyline on Rick and Morty, you know, like.
So I just want to do this joke. So would you say that everything is trying it everywhere all at once?
Yes. Yes. Like to that point. So yeah, Oscar nominated, Golden Globe winning film. That is totally unrelated to the MCU, but is more or less made by the same kind of people and the same people in many regards. Doing a kind of cleaner, better way of a multiverse story that doesn't require you to have watched 30-something other films plus television or watch superheroes. Some people just check out at superheroes. You know, you can have all of the characters in that movie. You can have hot dog fingers. Jamie Lee Curtis with hot dog fingers. And people will accept that so long as it's not like, and by the action figure of Jamie Lee Curtis with hot dog fingers. And you know what was the best comic of 1986? Jamie Lee Curtis, Hot Dog Fingers Strikes Back. And it redefined the character as dark and gritty. Whereas in the 60s, yeah, like, It's easy access. And I was digging around on Disney Plus the other day, and there's a multiverse show for like teens or preteens on it that is not connected to Everything Everywhere All at Once and not connected to the MCU, but is very obviously visually drawn from the branding of Everything Everywhere All at Once and is, of course, on Disney Plus. There are multiple avenues for people to go into their multiverse interest and obsession. And at this point, I'm just so happy that Star Trek actually came up with a mechanic to turn it off. They're like, no, it's been too long. I'm sorry. Our universe has flowed away. You'll never see us again. It's like, that's smart. You can return to it when you need to. But for the most part, you can be like, oh, I'm sorry. They're not here right now. Goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, especially with even with that mechanic of universes floating apart, you have different Star Treks in different time periods. Oh, we want to do another mirror universe story? Okay, we're just going to put it over here in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, we can set it before. We can set it at certain other times. We want to suddenly give Zachary Quinto all the money on Earth to become like old Spock. Yeah, fuck it. Have him fall through a red matter hole. He gets old. He starts dicking around with old Spock's kind of tech, and he gets thrown right back into the universe. It's like, what happened, red matter? Ah, you Spocks and your fucking red matter.
But also, I think another potential explanation for the current hatred toward Quantumania is that you talked earlier about needing the occasional breath of fresh air. And there's this idea in a lot of the fandom that you can only do things one way and everything has to be a certain way. Like, certain movies in the MCU can only be done this way. They can only be this thing, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Cinematically, in the MCU, what normally plays the role of that breath of fresh air?
Yeah, Ant-Man as a heist joke buddy comedy type ensemble film. And this is a heist film, somewhat, in the vein of technically The Wizard of Oz is a heist film. But it doesn't have that buddy comedy aspect. That's not its point. People kept asking me if Ruiz is in it, and it's like, I'm sorry. He should be. He should have been included somehow, but no, he's not. There are entire, like, side characters and B plots that have just been jettisoned for this, and essentially they're like, yeah, they're happening over there and over there, which is very, like, it's more realistic in terms of, like, you don't hang around. It's not like the set of Friends. You're not always around the same people. That's unrealistic. Yeah. But more importantly, it feels a lot, again, returning to it, it feels a lot more like how comics go, where, like, you'll have one writer come out with a couple of banger stories, and then they'll bring in another writer or another artist for that same writer for a couple of issues while, like, the main writer or the main artist take a break or they work on something else. And this is just, it's an example of that happening. Of course, it doesn't have the same pacing, same style, same flair, same humor, same approach. It's by a different creative team. And yes, I know the director on this is the same director as before, but everything else about it is different. Yeah. And I feel like that's the whole goddamn point behind it. The writer of it is most importantly different, and bringing it right back. Bah, 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 bah. It's one of the guys who wrote a lot of Rick and Morty. Specifically, I believe the Council of Ricks episode, which is directly taken from the Parliament of Reeds, which is itself based on the Council of Kings.
I had a feeling that's where you were going.
You need to mention the Parliament of Reeds first, because that many assholes together in one place will destroy the universe.
Now, to stay on Reed and certain affiliated characters for a moment, again, in terms of the response on social media, what I haven't seen this yet, but I am dying to. I want to see someone say that they hated this movie, and they're not going to come back to the MCU until the Fantastic Four movie. Because as I recently saw someone on TikTok point out, guess what this movie is? It's a Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Technically, it's a Fantastic Four movie. There are exactly... There's five characters, but add Herbie if necessary. You know? There are rarely only those four assholes on an adventure. At the very least, they're dragging, like, the poor gargoyle or one of their goddamn kids or Alicia Masters along. It's just, you gotta feel for characters like Alicia Masters is Ben Grimm's wife, right?
Yeah.
If I recall, girlfriend. Yeah. You gotta feel for characters like that who I kind of get the idea that when she shows up on certain adventures, like if she shows up in Latveria and like Doom is fighting Reed, Doom's like, oh, you brought Alicia? Why? We're not going to fight the blood girl. Oh, get Alicia a room. Alicia, can I get you anything? Yeah, we'll have food sent up to you. Okay, I'll see you later. Now, Reed, for your doom! You know, it's just... it works, and it very much, as you say, it's along the lines of kind of their crazy Jack Kirby-esque adventures of we're in the land of whatever the fuck, and the designs are just out there. They're out there. It's fine. Holy shit, that guy's head looks like broccoli. But I can see how people would be extra fucking pissed looking at this and being like, this is a Fantastic Four film. You have a Richards on screen as the villain, keep in mind, Kang is the descendant of Reed Richards and Sue Storm. And it's just, I could see how maybe possibly there should have been a third or a replacement post-credit scene where it's like, and here's Reed. You finally get to see, like, maybe you do the Council of Kangs, and it's like, oh my god, that's so epic, that's so epic. And it goes to black, and there's a longer wait than usual for a post-credit scene. And you're like, okay, is it done or something? And then you see the Parliament of Reeds, and it's like, it's not just Kang that's going to blow up the fucking universe. It's Kang and Reed fighting each other that will undo everything. Yeah. I mean, I could see how that would have been amazing, but
that totally would. But at the same time, the simple fact is, I can see Marvel Studios going like, "Okay, we've set up all of our new heroes in Phase 4. If we're starting Phase 5, time to introduce our villain. Let's use Kang. Okay, great. We've got a great story idea for Kang, but we're nowhere near ready to bring in the Fantastic Four." Is there another family of characters that we could use to bring Kang in? Ant-Man is right there.
And it's definitely not who I would have gone to specifically if it weren't for the fact that they already established that, like, Janet Van Dyne spent the last couple of decades here. Okay, I guess that's good enough reason.
Yeah, like, it's one of those, no, they're not. Probably not the first choice, but from all the characters and character dynamics that have already been set up.
Yeah.
What you have here is as close to the Fantastic Four as the MCU can currently get.
Yeah, because like they've already gone through their interpersonal dramas. You know that. And so they're worked out to a comfortable space where they can quip at each other. And there's some minor growth in terms of, like, you know, Scott is still trying to protect his daughter at all costs, except like being with his daughter. And at the end, he accepts that, like, okay, no, I have to make that Tony Stark-esque sacrifice somewhat, you know, and fights Kang hand to hand. But yeah, I know that a lot of people were like, where's the character arcs? And it's like, you had the character arcs. You don't need, not everything has to be a character arc. If you spend a weekend in a different place, do you come back a completely changed person? Not necessarily. In fact, if that happened all the time, you might have issues. So I liked the roughly tiny nudge of character development that occurs in this, because once again, bringing it back, it's more like the comic books where you have to keep a character like maintained in terms of like characteristics and behavior and stuff. And not every issue is suddenly going to change the way they look at the world. Hell, due to editorial, sometimes you can have that issue where it's like, and everything changed, and the next issue, nothing changed. Oh, yeah. That we got a little bit of character growth should be like, okay, cool. Hey, it's more than we got with, like, the last three fucking Die Hard movies. So, yeah.
And, I mean, there is one complaint that I keep hearing around Catherine Newton as Cassie, where you have the standard, oh, no, she was a bad actress, she did a terrible job, and no. And I also hear she didn't have anything to really do as Cassie, and I don't agree, but I do feel like more could have been done with her.
Yeah, like they're set up and not full. It's not payoff, but it's like you didn't make the full use of it. You have a character who is righteously rebellious, and yet Hank leads the army of ants, and it's Michelle Pfeiffer, Janet Van Dyne, who like you know, somewhat leads the locals, aside from the princess or whatever, the queen, that chick, the chick in charge. There definitely should have been more aspects of Casey or Cassie trying to start a rebellion, trying to like be a hero on a larger scale, and it just not working. And at the very end, it finally pans out in some small way that is big. Instead of it being this big moment in front of everyone, it's this small moment in front of her dad and Kang. And it's like, it matters in that exact moment. And she actually is that hero. And the only people who can see it are, you know, only one of them will appreciate it. And the other is just like, I don't fucking care. I have stomped on your father's face 500 separate occasions. I don't care about your personal growth.
Yeah, and I was also thinking more with MODOK, where it's brought up that, you know, she was, I believe the phrase she used was, almost kidnapped by a guy dressed like a bee when I was 6.
I mean, it's true.
And they bring that up, but I kind of wonder if there were ways to kind of play with that to develop Cassie's character more.
I mean, I'm sure there is, but yeah. It becomes a thing of, considering everything else that has occurred in her life, if she's still just going to be defined by that one time a dick in a bee costume blew up her bedroom, it doesn't feel earned. If Scott had died then, or if Scott had vanished for 5 years at that point, totally. Because she would blame the dick in the bee costume. As it is, she got a wicked awesome life-size Thomas the Tank Engine. Not the worst.
I mean, no, also true. Like, it's kind of one of those... I think there was something that they could play with there to pull more out of the character. Does this movie need that? Not necessarily. Yeah.
Like, I could see if they made her a little more timid, afraid, or angry at Darren. Yeah. But I think that is intentionally meant to dissipate the moment we see his actual face. And when that breaks for her emotionally, that should be the all clear of like, no, how can she be like traumatized by this? This is ridiculous. She was traumatized by a normal man in a battle suit. 100%. Yeah, scary, scary. MODOK? Less so.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like, yeah, maybe there should have been a moment of like, oh God, it's Darren. I'm so scared. Oh, here it comes. And then like, reveal. And she just laughs at him. That would have probably worked.
Oh yeah, no, I would have absolutely
given the audience the opportunity to laugh as well. Because yes, there's all opportunities to laugh at MODOK, but I think they come after his introduction, and you should be fucking in giggle fits when he appears the first time. Because he's MODOK. He's ridiculous. He's inherently a stupid, silly character, intentionally. Essentially, the extreme of what Jack Kirby could get away with when it came to designing a character. And personally, I didn't like the Patton Oswalt show, but a lot of people seem to like that. And it should be obvious that the only way you can do this character, and certainly the Avengers video game showed this, the only way you can do this character is if it is comedic. And not a viable threat.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing I've seen on social media is complaining about how, you know, MODOK looks terrible. The CG on him was awful. And it's like, y'all realize that if you are taking the character of MODOK seriously, you have completely misunderstood everything about the character of MODOK, and I therefore cannot take you seriously.
Yeah, and it's one of those characters where I suspect, sure, they could have done a more quote-unquote realistic or badass or whatever look, but I think they found the exact level of CGI that they actually want, where it's like, yeah, supposed to be fucking clown shoes.
Oh, yeah, and like at the point when Cassie is looking at him like, dude, please just stop.
Yeah, stop being a dick. I don't know what else to do. It's like, that makes sense. That's a good character play in, like, he's lost, he's afraid, he's been badly injured and deformed, and he's trying desperately to find, like, oh, God, what am I supposed to do now? What am I supposed to be now? How am I supposed to do anything? And that he's just immediately given the shittiest answer ever and rolls with it hard to the point that, you know, he allows this to be done to him. That's an interesting comment on just how much of a bitch Darren is and always was.
Yeah, no, he's very much that character who you give him the slightest taste of power, he thinks he owns the world. But once that power is taken away, he has no concept of how to react.
Yeah, he's just dumbfounded and kind of afraid of the world. And I think that works in contrast to the quiet power and authority and reserved danger of Jonathan Majors, Kang the Conqueror.
Yeah, definitely. But before we get to him, because, yeah, that is a performance we need to go into hard. I did have one question, which is, can we please get Michelle Pfeiffer her own, like, Taken or something along that lines movie, please? Because
that'd be pretty cool.
Her action scenes in here were really making a case for it.
Like, I really like how reserved Michelle Pfeiffer is, because she could do anything she wants. She's capable and a fantastic performer, and everyone just, like, loves her. And obviously, since Batman Returns, I and everyone else my age has a thing for her. But, you know,
yeah.
I like how she just kind of goes, no, and then vanishes for a few years. Where'd you go, Michelle Pfeiffer? We need you.
I mean,
and then appear for this, to come back to be fucking Janet Van Dyne a couple of years ago, and then in this, you're like, what? How much money did they throw at you?
I mean, like, we've had all of these action movies with older male leads. Kind of time for one with an older female lead, you know?
Yeah, that isn't Charlize Theron. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, Charlize Theron. It's just that, you know, you're eating the whole pie.
Yeah.
Maybe one slice for someone else. You can have, like, 7 out of 8 slices, Charlize Theron. But let someone else have a little bit of the pie. Helen Mirren has been looking hungry ever since Red 2.
Okay, yeah, actually, Helen Mirren blowing people away with a machine gun would be a lot of fun. I would watch 90 minutes of that.
Have you not seen Red and Red 2?
Oh, I absolutely have. I'm just thinking in terms of giving more of that.
Just more of it. Just more of it. That's fair. So long as I can get more of John Malkovich. Malkovich.
All right, now I think now, yeah, it's time to talk about him, or he will find us.
He who might remain later on. At the moment, he's doing stuff. I really like the comic book level of intensity when he's angry, and how it's just like, no, he shoots lasers out of his hands. No explanation. Fuck you. Coupled with the honest to God, like, highest level acting you might see on TV performances of Jonathan Majors. Like, he's just so reserved and quiet and dangerous in this fantastic, I don't know, alluring way. What a fucking actor. What a fucking actor. Yeah. And that he gets to essentially do whatever he wants, because we've seen a few Kangs at this point. We've seen He Who Remains, who is weary and, you know, just like depressed on a level people can't understand necessarily, because of everything that rests on him. And yet he has this great little charm and wit about him, this playfulness, even at the end of the fucking universe. And he's just like, ugh. We have this Kang who is so determined. Like, he's not even necessarily the worst Kang, you get the feeling. He's not the true villain. There are other worse Kangs. He's just a Kang who happens to have a different agenda, and that itself is still scary. And then you get the other Kangs, and it's like, he gets to do whatever he wants for the next who knows how many years. He just gets to play with the character infinitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just simply enjoyed how everybody kept just referring to him as he or him. Nobody names him until I think when Kang actually finally shows up.
Yeah, at some point he and him turns into just the Conqueror. Conqueror. And it's like, I like the way that they laid that out, so it's not some stupid fucking name and title he's taken and asserts. It's he literally conquered this area, and so everyone's just like, that fucking Conqueror. You know, the Conqueror. Ugh, the asshole. You know, like, it gives an idea of the level of oppression they're under. They weren't beaten. They're not like, you know, living under a difference. They were conquered.
You know, not only were they conquered, they were conquered so badly that they are too scared to use his name.
Yeah, that's great. And as I mentioned on Twitter, he did it with nothing more than a snazzy outfit. it's incredible. And that's one hell of an outfit. I saw someone, maybe it was like Screen Crush or I don't know, one of those, like, you know, new rock stars or something, and they were complaining like, oh, he has telekinesis but he doesn't have it later. It's like, it's the suit, you dumbass.
Yeah,
it's literally said he got his power back to his ship. The ship gave him his suit. Janet breaks the power core, which depowers the ship, but he's left with his suit, and the suit is where all of those powers come from. He's very, 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 very smart, and he's a very good fighter, but all he has at the end of the day is what he has when he's fighting Ant-Man hand-to-hand. He can hit you, but if that suit is not working, he can't fucking power blast you or throw you against a wall or anything. I swear, people intentionally stop paying attention to the details when it comes to these films so that they can be upset with them.
Yes, absolutely. Because I have seen so many people insist, oh, how can I take Kang seriously when he was beaten by ants?
Massive army. Like, how do you take the orcs seriously after they've been beaten by the charge of the Rohan? And ghosts who didn't fulfill their oath. Ooh, oath breakers! Watch out, oath breakers!
And I mean, let's be very clear about what Kang was actually finally defeated by. This Kang was defeated by two Ant-Men, two Wasps, Stature, a technocratic civilization of ants that had advanced several thousand years in less than a day.
Mm-hmm.
And Kang's own conquered people rising up in revolution.
Plus the literal device of his defeat slash demise being his very own futuristic fucking multiversal engine, which is a scary, scary thing that was the MacGuffin of the film.
Yeah.
He was defeated by a lot of effort and a lot of luck because he was one man left at the, like, it was just him. And he didn't even have power at the end. He didn't have any, like superpowers. And yet he still came within a breath of winning. That should matter. And that's one Kang. That's the point of the after credits, is it took that much to defeat one Kang, and there are so many of them, and these ones actually cooperate with each other instead of being this lone wolf Kang who has to go it alone. He makes Paul Rudd ugly, and that is supposed to be symbolic.
Yeah.
He beats Paul Rudd ugly. And yet people don't see him as a threat. He broke the pretty thing. That's the point.
Marvel has given us a villain that beat the ageless Paul Rudd into aging. He beat the older into this man. That is not supposed to be possible.
Yeah, he beat him older, and I love that at the end, Scott's even like suddenly doubting everything about his world, and it's like, oh no, and it's like, yes, he not only beat him physically older, he gave him that older ennui and like exhaustion in the world of like, yeah, but nothing's good anymore. It's just that's fantastic. He actually beat Paul Rudd until entropy kicked in.
Yeah, and like, quite simply, if you're going to complain about Kang losing to Ant-Man, fine. But you use the full list.
Yeah, plus he has been, like, defeated in random issues. Like, his schemes have been thwarted by Ant-Man before. Ant-Man's not a shit-end fucking, like, superhero. He's a founding Avenger in the comics. It's a complicated history, and I'm thankful that Hank has never hit Janet on screen.
Amen to that.
Fuck. But, like, it's not a character who is lesser than the others. There's a lot of ridiculous science going on there that is, it's all make-believe, obviously, but there's a lot of it that, like, when it comes to superheroes, 99% of it is so fantastic it can't even be, like, explained in a scientific manner.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, Ant-Man actually makes sense. And yeah, if a man the size of a flea punched you, it would be like a bullet. And it's like, okay, so he's instantly lethal. He is an instant lethal weapon. No one gives a fuck anymore.
Well, let's be honest. When it comes to the science around this character, at least in these movies, are you going to argue with Michael Douglas? Because I'm not.
No, because his delivery is just too good at it. He can say utter crap, and it's just, yeah, but it's Michael Douglas, so it must be true. And because it's Michael Douglas, you get the sense that he doesn't really believe it either, but here it is.
As with Michelle Pfeiffer, I think he's just there to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a film that I don't feel like they had to twist Michael Douglas's arm to come back and be like, well, what do I get to do in this one? You ride on the ants again. Okay. But it's like an army of technocratic ants who see you as a god king. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, all right. Yeah, all right.
Oh, I get the best character entrance in the entire movie? Cool, I'm in.
I get to kill Bill Murray?
Yeah, and like Bill Murray showing up in this movie. Did he need to be? You know his reputation of just like showing up in places or probably just walking onto sets, so they decide to put him into the movie.
Yeah, and it would be irritating in this sense if they didn't immediately kill him. Like, that's good. Because yeah. Also he has become, like, it's slowly come out that he's also a dickhead. He's a dickhead. You know, guy's just a prick to people. Unless he thinks that, like, they can give him something. Apparently he's a taker. He's very much like a taker user kind of personality. And so seeing him like, oh God, here it comes. It's the wink and nod cameo from Bill. Oh, he's dead. Yay. You did the thing and then you killed him horribly. I feel better watching that. Aristotle was right. Catharsis reigns.
Yeah. And to be perfectly frank, I don't know if I would call it killed him horribly so much as killed him poetically. Because of what
was used. I would say getting eaten would be horrible, but yes.
I mean, like, he was so casual about drinking the little squid thing. When you see Michael Douglas throw another squid thing at him and then make it giant, I'm just like, if that's not karma, then I don't know what it is.
Very karmic, very poetically justice-y. I just mean, like, fuck, that would suck. And it would suck in the exact right way of, like, yeah, good.
Good. Oh, yeah. Like horrific for Bill Murray's character? Sure. For me as the viewer, not so much.
Yeah, no, that was a nice surprise. Seeing him die. But yeah, like, I enjoyed it. It's not going to ever be my favorite MCU film, but I see it for what it is in the structure of the overall story and as just an individual little arc to the microverse. Whatever. I don't care. You don't need to like all of them. You don't even need to, like, respect what they do with the story. Just move on to the next one if you don't like it, because as Kevin Feige said, they really don't care what you think about these. They're going to just keep doing them for decades and decades and decades, and that's what they're going to do with The Simpsons, and that's what they're going to do with Star Wars, and that's what they're going to do with everything. That's what they're going to do with The Muppets. It's what they're going to do with all of these properties they own, because that's the fucking point. You just keep pumping out content, and whereas with other things you might have to reboot them now and then, very specifically with Marvel, you can get away with just keeping the story going. You can have the reboot occur in story and just it flows. At some point, I will not be surprised if 50 fucking years from now, they're like, oh yes, you can start at Iron Man 1 and watch all the way up. If they don't just jump back and be like, Spider-Man 1, Blade 1.
Yeah.
Before. Who knows? But yeah, like, I love that because it means that there'll just always be more stuff. It's not, oh, remember that? That was cool. It'll always be there. Which means that if you just didn't like one, it's fine. If you want to walk away from these for a few years, like some people do with comic books, every now and then it occurs and you're just like, I don't like anything that's being written currently. I don't like any of these creative decisions. I don't like any of these creative teams. I'm going to retreat either back to reading some older stuff, or I'm just going to give comics a go for a couple of years. That's normal. And then you come back to it when they do something interesting and you're like, oh shit, sweet, cool. Superman's made of electricity now. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there was very much a period of time where if I wanted to find a decently written Spider-Man, I had to go to the Avengers.
Yeah.
Because over like, there, he was a wise ass. In his own book, it was grim, dark as fuck.
Yeah, I was an X-Men fan in the 90s. And in the early 90s, that's great. In the late 90s, like 99, 2000, that's great. Because you've got like Grant Morrison doing their new X-Men stuff. And you've got X-Statics coming out and all that. But from roughly like from after the Age of Apocalypse until the new X-Men, it's a shit show of crap. And the art style is just garbage, and the storylines never take off, and you're just reading it like a slog. Oh, God. Another Gen X title. Oh, God. More. And it just happens sometimes. You hit a wall with certain stories, characters, and approaches, and it either takes you to walk away for a while and come back when you're feeling refreshed, or you to walk away for a while until they refresh the characters and circumstances and situation. It's normal. It's fine. You don't need to like make review bombing and obsessing over these kinds of films your entire fucking personality.
Like, I mean, yeah, like with that, the simple fact is, and This goes to not just the MCU, but literally any fandom.
Yeah.
I've got news for you. We don't own the content. We simply consume it.
Yeah, if you want to have a say, make your own content. And as I was saying just yesterday about Snyder Brothers, Snyder Bros, Snyder Brothers Incorporated. you have the potential to do things. Like, any person can create something. There is no magic spark that exists only in a few people. It's just a matter of, like, confidence, experience, and know-how of the technique. And if you want to see characters go in a certain way, like you want the story to follow this route instead of the route it is, you can just write it. You can make it fan fiction. So it's overtly the same characters, situations, and all of that, but you are front loading it with the knowledge of like, listen, I'm not trying to claim this copyright whatsoever. I'm just making fan fiction. It's cool. Put it up on your live journal, whatever. Or you can go the Alan Moore route that he followed for Watchmen, and it's you come up with a story that you'd rather see these characters do, and then you just like come up with pastiches of the characters. If you're not allowed to use the IP, make parodies of them, make references to them. The world is full of Captain America fakeouts and Spider-Man half-asses from the WCW to fucking Archie Comics. You can just do whatever. You can just come up with something. Liberty Lad. Fuck, there you go. Liberty Lad!
I can't believe you actually brought up the Arachno Kid.
I will never let some crimes be forgotten. But, you know, some people who just obsess about wanting to have the thing never take that step. They never go, okay, this is not happening, at least not without us convincing people that it is a good project. And I am so confused that at no point did any of the Snyder cult just be like, well, why don't we just, like, draw it? Make it a comic book,
yeah.
and like internally within that community fund it, and they'd be so many issues deep into it now, and they'd have refined the story, and they could come up with like a version of it that they could present to DC, and maybe be like, hey, so maybe at the very least we could you know, you could print this, or we could adapt it for like the Justice League in an Elseworlds comic, or maybe James Gunn will look at it and be like, I like this. We're going to incorporate this as an Elseworlds movie or a reference to something or whatever. Like, the world doesn't fucking owe you shit. But if you make something, the world might feel inclined to pay you money for it as an exchange. And it doesn't seem to ever occur to them. It's always demand, demand, demand. And it's just, you can do whatever you want creatively, yeah. You know? And some people just can't. They're capable. They are, but they can't.
But also, if they did that, if they actually put effort into getting the product that they want out there, then in, again, a bit of beautiful poetic irony, they would then have to face the next generation of hate watchers criticizing and tearing apart and bitching about their work.
Yeah, sunrise, sunset, sunrise, exactly. Sunset.
So,
oh well.
instead, all they do is continually hate watch and bitch about a movie that they helped bring a worldwide gross of over $250 million.
Wow. Ooh.
So you can bitch about it to your heart's content, because you're going to get more of the same because you insist on supporting it.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that this will make money because it's the marketing machine. It's part of the machine now. And I can't wait for the next one because I just like enjoying these films and TV shows. I just enjoy them. I don't think they're great art. I read a really fascinating thing the other day, and I think it's a good approach. It's time for film criticism to move past the MCU. Just take it for granted that these exist. Ignore them, essentially. It's a long-running TV show. It exists there. You can come back to it now and then, but there is no reason for serious film critics to return to the MCU every single time a new product drops. Because it's essentially the same as like straight to DVD and straight to VHS sequels. Just let them occur. If it's beneath you, it's beneath you. If you want the big bad beast to go away and to stop being the center of attention, just don't look.
To stop those monsters, 1, 2, 3. Here's a fresh new way that's trouble-free. It's got Paul Anka's guarantee.
Guarantee void in Tennessee. Just don't look. 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 Just don't look.
It worked! They're all dead!
Pay attention to what you want to. Promote those things. Complain about the aspects that they don't get. If there's really a piece of art that you're not seeing at all, at the very least, point that out and write an article about it. If not, you know, go out and create it yourself. I think it's time for the audience and the critics to kind of part ways on the MCU and it to become just the long-running Simpsons-esque background music, radiation, whatever. And if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. If you don't, that's fine. Pop in, hang around for a long time, do whatever you want. It's a fucking mainstay. Stop obsessing over it. And I say that as someone who reviews every single one of them because I actually enjoy them.
Well, I was just about to say, thank God we are not serious film critics.
But we watch other shit, you know. Yeah. Like, this isn't our life. We watch art films and bad fucking Z-list films and fun horrors and like ridiculous fucking Jared Butler films called Plane. You know, I sincerely wish that if nothing else, Quantumania, which is not a bad film, just breaks some people's concentration on the MCU and they go find something else to fucking talk about.
Well, if nothing else, if I remember correctly from Rotten Tomatoes, and folks, mark this episode down because this is the only time I'm ever going to reference Rotten Tomatoes. But the audience and the critics have already parted ways, because if I remember right, it's something like 47% critical rating and 88% audience approval. Which, for a movie that is essentially Wizard of Oz with a dash of Star Wars and potentially like just a sprinkle of the 1980 Flash Gordon, that sounds about right, and is also a movie that I will be here for and support every goddamn time. But at the end of the day, when Phase 5 is over, and I've seen all of the Phase 5 movies, this is probably going to be the same as every other Ant-Man movie in the previous phases, and I'm probably going to be slotting it like middle of the pack.
Yeah. You know, nothing against it. It's just, it's enjoyable. It forwards the story slightly. It's a good way to spend 2 hours. That's it. And when I say the critics should part ways and not deal with it, you know, I think they should change their approach. We should not be looking at the MCU episode by episode anymore. They should be looking at like the overall themes, or like Phase 4's approach to feminism in characters, or the post-colonial, non-ethnocentric attempts to create POV characters in Phase 4 kind of thing. That's one way of looking at it. Like, have those kinds of more interesting discussions about them. You don't need to know the critics' opinion of, like, the newest film, because as you said, I'm still going to watch the fucking thing. Their opinion doesn't mean anything. And if anything, it's become clear that half the time, it's just that they don't understand the story approach. And it's like, then what the fuck is the point of this? We're talking past each other.
I mean, frankly, yeah. Like,
yeah.
For my part, and I'm actually saying this as an amateur film critic, I would usually tell people, like, find that one critic. Like, I generally stick with the crew over at Double Toasted because their film tastes generally mirror mine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I see a film that interests me, I'm going to go see it no matter what. If I see a film that I'm not sure about, I'm going to check out their review and then decide.
Yeah. Yeah, and critics, please listen to me carefully. If you find that you more often than not crap on a specific genre or production, you're probably just doing it for the clicks. If you actually want to talk about cinema, go watch the films that you want those films to be. Criterion Channel's fantastic. Check it the fuck out. It's relatively cheap. It's cheaper than fucking Netflix. There is so much like artistic films, international films, and everything available on like Prime and fucking Crave and whatever. go to your heart's content, pirate that shit, download that shit illegally, check out what young creatives are doing on YouTube in terms of long form dramatic narrative. You'll be surprised what is available for completely free from talents who have not yet been picked up and may never be. It takes two to tango, and you can't fall into the black hole of the MCU without jumping. So climb your fucking way back out if you don't want to be in there.
Yeah. I mean, yes. We when we cover movies like this, it's for the hits, it's for the listens, it's for the clicks. But at least we'll freely admit it.
I don't even give a fuck about the clicks. I enjoy MCU. I like talking about the next one that comes out and the next one that comes out because I actually just enjoy it.
Oh yeah,
not sitting around like we're not reviewing fucking Avatar 2. Which pissed me off. Because why bother?
No. I mean, why bother? And to be perfectly frank, I had no interest in Avatar 2 at all.
Yeah.
When I say that we're reviewing these bigger things for the clicks, what I'm referring to specifically is we have done theme months where we have been open and honest about the fact that we are stopping that theme to do a new film specifically because we know it's going to get us numbers. And we'll tell you that we're doing it for the numbers.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, the last time we did that before Quantumania was, as we said, plane. And it's like, yeah, I'm shilling for Jared Butler burner films. Ooh. That's the big money, baby. Big money.
I think actually the last big one was we stopped. It was either Christmas month or the month before for something that actually I can't remember.
So clearly it was an important film that impacted cinema and our lives. But yeah, if you enjoy just fun, this is probably a decent one for you. It's another in the story. If you miss it, you'll be all right. If you didn't like it, whatever. Move on. Please, God. Move on with your lives.
Look, if nothing else, the Fantastic Four film will come out. Jonathan Majors, I'm sorry, he's going to be in it.
And, yeah, he's going to be in it.
And this time, he will do what Oscar Isaacs couldn't do in the X-Men franchise, which is terrify you as a powerful Egyptian pharaoh. Yeah, that's a Robin Tut joke.
Yeah. at least he doesn't look like Ivan Ooze.
Yeah.
If you disagreed with that and want to send our opinion to the Quantumverse, you can email it and we'll see if it gets through there. I don't know how the internet works, but I'm pretty sure it involves the quantum universe.
Well, probably. I mean, it's pretty much a series of tubes, and I'm sure one of them goes through there.
Delicious tubes. You can contact us at...
Well, if you want to send us to the quantum universe, I mean, I could use the vacation, so I'd be down for it. We can be reached at realgeeksHFX@gmail.com. or RealGeeksHFX on Twitter. I can be found at The Maritime Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Hive on those rare occasions that I remember to check Hive and see if anything is actually happening. Or you can email me directly at themaritimelord@gmail.com.
And I can be found at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and Crash and Burn everywhere else. And I am everywhere else, but I do not check it. Apparently I have Spoutable. Fuck. Shit, I don't know. What are we watching next?
Well, I had previously said that we would be doing either Quantumania or Star Trek IV, depending on what the release order was going to end up looking like for the episodes. Mm. Star Trek IV will now be in 2 weeks. Because I know I said that I was high at the start of this episode.
Yeah.
But next week, our next episode, can only be done high because we'll be discussing the biopic surrounding the legend of one Pablo Escobar.
Ah.
As we review probably the one non-MCU film that I have been looking forward to for a very long time. It's time for Cocaine Bear, and odds are this is going to be a drunk show. I'll explain this more off mic, but there's going to be booze.
Oh, good. Well, until then, goodbye!
I have holes!